X-Core unveils a way to enjoy space tourism without the crowds. Garmin debuts a more economical alternative to the 496. And Endeavour is back from a record-setting mission. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, March 27th, 2008. On Wednesday, a small California aerospace company unveiled a new self-contained suborbital spaceship designed to provide affordable front seat rides to the edge of space for the estimated millions of people who will want to buy a ticket. The company, X-Core Aerospace of Mojave, California, announced its two-seat Lynx suborbital spaceship will carry people or payloads to where they will experience weightlessness, see the stars set against the blackness of space, and see the curvature of the Earth and its atmosphere below. Lynx will use X-Core's kerosene liquid oxygen rocket technology to produce a vehicle which can be reused many times and requires no separate booster or mothership. Lynx will be able to take off and land horizontally from any runway over 7,200 feet long, allowing the option to abort a takeoff safely, an advantage over vertically launched craft. With Lynx, X-Core brings a unique proposition to the emerging space tourism market, estimated at over $500 million. First flight is targeted for 2010. Garmin has listened to pilots who love the GPS map 496, but can't make it pencil out. On Wednesday, Garmin unveiled its GPS Map 495 portable aviation device with many popular 496 features, but at a fraction of the cost. The 495 includes Garmin's Safe Taxi Airport Diagrams, Smart Airspace, AOPA's Airport Directory Data, Enhanced High-Res Terrain Database, Aviation Database with Private Airports and Heliports, Accelerated GPS Update Rate, and European VFR Reporting Waypoints. So what did they take out? Well, the GPS Map 495 does not include the GXM30A smart antenna with XMWX satellite weather, and it's not compatible with the GXM30A smart antenna. The GPS Map 495 is expected to be available at Lakeland. The expected street price is $1,595, and if you get one while you're at Lakeland, you'll also get a $100 rebate. The Space Shuttle Endeavour is back home after a 16-day mission to the International Space Station. The STS-123 mission began March 11th, and delivered the first segment of the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency's Kibo Laboratory and the Canadian Space Agency's two-armed robotic system known as Dexter. The shuttle made a routine landing a little after 8 p.m. Eastern Time yesterday evening at the Kennedy Space Center. Mission managers passed on the first landing opportunity at 7.05 p.m. Eastern Time due to low clouds near the Kennedy Space Center. On the second pass, the weather was fine. As congested as major U.S. metropolitan airports have become, it could have been much worse. A USA Today analysis of federal data shows the fastest-growing airport traffic in the country is not happening at JFK or LAX, but rather at mid-sized airports an hour or more outside major cities. Airport consultant Mike Boyd told the paper volume at these airports has jumped by up to 400% in the past decade, driven by discount airlines moving to cheaper secondary airports, and by population growth in regions located about an hour from New York, Los Angeles, Boston, and Washington. The trend has helped alleviate strain on major metro airports, but has also stimulated development around the smaller, more distant airports. Southwest Airlines is credited with spurring major growth near two Northeast airports. At Long Island, MacArthur Airport, about 75 minutes from Manhattan, has seen the number of departing passengers grow from 240,000 in 1998 to 1.2 million last year, and more than 100 commercial buildings have sprouted nearby in that same period. In Manchester, New Hampshire, about 55 miles from Boston, low rents and landing fees were used as incentives to attract Southwest there. Airport Deputy Director Brian O'Neill says Southwest's 1999 arrival brought not only tens of thousands of new travelers, but new service from competing airlines. Despite the NIMBY battles, which seem to dominate the headlines, aviation consultant Patrick Murphy told USA Today that in most suburbs where airports are expanding, quote, the local citizenry is delighted with the air service they can obtain, unquote. Up next on ANN, airlines scramble to look more closely at their maintenance programs. U.S. Airways suspends the pilot who shot a hole in an A319, and another A380 is grounded by a fuel pump issue. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC 700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 27th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The FAA's sudden renewed interest in closely monitoring airline maintenance procedures led American Airlines to cancel about 200 domestic flights on Wednesday, so crews could inspect wire bundles on a number of its MD-82 and MD-83 aircraft. American spokesman Tim Wagner told the Associated Press, quote, "We are re-inspecting the MD-80s to make sure the wiring is installed and secured exactly according to the directive," unquote. He did not specify the location or function of the wiring bundles he was talking about or which directive was involved. American says it uncovered a problem during a joint audit with the FAA of the company's maintenance operations. While 200 cancellations is unusual, American notes that's less than 10% of its daily scheduled service, which, of course, is great as long as it's not your flight. The U.S. Airways pilot, who apparently fired his gun accidentally in the cockpit of an Airbus A319 over the weekend, has been placed on leave by the airline, pending a review. Flight 1536 was en route from Denver to Charlotte Saturday afternoon when the .40 caliber semi-automatic handgun discharged. The aircraft was descending through 8000 on approach to Charlotte at the time of the incident. The pilot who owns the gun is a member of TSA's Federal Flight Deck Officer Program, which allows pilots to legally carry sidearms on board commercial aircraft. Neither of the two pilots in the cockpit were injured, but the bullet did leave a hole in the inner and outer fuselage skins, the outer hole visible under the starboard cockpit window. For the second time in a month, Singapore Airlines has grounded one of its A380 Super Jumbos due to a problem with an aircraft fuel pump. It happened Tuesday evening, delaying passengers headed to Sydney, Australia. While acknowledging the problem appeared to be similar to the fuel pump issue that grounded the carrier's first A380 last month, airline spokesman Stephen Forshaw told the Associated Press, quote, "It's important to mention it's not the same problem and not the same aircraft," unquote. Such mechanical issues are not uncommon in any airline fleet, but we're talking here about a fleet of three, meaning the pumps have failed on 67% of the fleet in a month. At the moment, Singapore Airlines is the only A380 operator. The company plans to take delivery of its fourth Super Jumbo in May and has another 15 on order after that. Delta Airlines issued a statement Tuesday announcing it's received notification from the National Mediation Board that the voting period for a union election among Delta's flight attendants has been scheduled for April 23rd to June 3rd. More than 50% of all Delta flight attendants would have to vote yes on union representation in order for the proposal to pass. If that happens, Delta's 12,000 active flight attendants will be represented by the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. The Associated Press reports that a similar vote failed in late 2001. Since then, across the industry, organizers have been telling workers they'll need union representation if major airlines begin merging. Joanne Smith, Delta's Senior Vice President of In-Flight Service and Global Product Development, maintains that a direct relationship is better for both the employees and the company. In her Tuesday statement, she told employees, quote, "The facts are, Delta flight attendants have it better than what the Association of Flight Attendants has been able to deliver at other airlines, and those airlines' contracts are not open to changes for several years to come, years in which Delta flight attendants will continue to enjoy higher rates of pay, a better profit-sharing program, and a better performance rewards program," unquote. The AFA-CWA called Smith's statement, quote, "typical anti-union rhetoric that companies use," unquote, and noted that more than 50% of Delta's flight attendants asked for the union election. Still ahead, officials in Missouri get incentives in place to lure Bombardier. The Mars rovers may have lasted too long, and Kemper Aviation surrenders its certificate to the FAA. You're listening to Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, March 27th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Bombardier Aerospace is considering Kansas City as a site for a passenger jet assembly plant, with a projected construction cost of $375 million U.S., according to city and state officials. The Associated Press reports that while it's still early, discussions have gone far enough that state officials outlined legislation Tuesday to provide state tax credits as a prerequisite for closing the deal. Bombardier Aerospace is based in Montreal, Quebec, and it needs a place to assemble the C-Series of 110 and 130-seat passenger jets. That plant would eventually employ up to 2,100 people directly and indirectly generate more than 5,000 more jobs at other area employers. The estimated overall economic impact over 22 years would be $5.9 billion U.S. Even with its economic incentive ducks in a row, the city and the state would have to wait out a battle over an earlier political commitment by the company to expand in Canada. That commitment was made before a plummeting U.S. dollar made locations in the states much more compelling. The plant also might not be built anywhere unless Bombardier can generate enough advance orders to justify it. Bombardier spokesman Mark Duquesne confirmed Tuesday to the AP that the company has talked to Missouri officials, but he indicated the company's preferred choice for a new plant is still Mirabel, Quebec. NASA never expected in its wildest dreams to still be funding the Mars rovers Spirit and Opportunity. They were designed to last through a 90-day mission. Now, 4 years later, both rovers are still limping around the red planet, although admittedly their power and propulsion systems have seen better days. The Associated Press reports that in its quest to trim the budget to allow more spending on its upcoming Mars Science Laboratory mission, NASA wrote to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, asking the lab to put one of the rovers in hibernation and limit the duties of the other to save $4 million. But the scientific community was outraged, and NASA quickly figured out it was a dumb PR move. The two rovers are among the agency's best-known projects among the general public. Their incredible durability and persistence have made them almost national pets, as well as rare examples of the government getting great bang for its buck. On Tuesday, NASA rescinded the letter, covering its keister thusly, quote, "This letter was not coordinated with the administrator's office and is in the process of being rescinded. The administrator has unequivocally stated that no rover will be turned off," unquote. It looks as if NASA is stuck funding the rovers at least as long as they keep going and going. Hey, perhaps Energizer Batteries needs a new mascot. It's now official. Following its third fatal accident in 6 months, the last of which claimed the life of one of its owners, on Tuesday, Kemper Aviation, based in Lantana, Florida, surrendered its operating certificate to the FAA. The agency told the Palm Beach Post, quote, "The certificate was surrendered for cancellation, meaning that the certificate is now void and that Kemper can no longer offer pilot training. The FAA is continuing to review the results of its February 2008 inspection," unquote. The NTSB's preliminary report stated that the latest accident, which took the lives of pilot and Kemper co-owner Jeff Roselle and three Florida Atlantic University researchers, came as the Cessna 172 was flying low and slow over pastures near Indiantown, Florida. Witnesses said the plane fell from about 250 feet above ground. After all these years, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports there are still new wrinkles emerging in the D.B. Cooper case, the only unsolved airline hijacking in history. Larry Carr, the FBI's lead agent on the Cooper case, tells the paper a farmer in Clark County near Vancouver, Washington, claims his kids were playing in a field he'd recently plowed when they discovered a parachute. Carr says the parachute is similar to one that Cooper jumped with and muses, quote, "If D.B. Cooper had pulled his chute not long after that jump, he would have landed in that area. Is this D.B. Cooper's parachute? We don't know yet," unquote. Carr says the unearthed parachute is too worn to read any markings. He's hoping someone with expert knowledge can assist in determining whether it's a Navy NB-6 backpack, consistent with the one working parachute known to have gone out the cabin door with D.B. Cooper back in 1971. Here's a prediction. Either the chute will disappear, like the Ark of the Covenant in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and spend the next century in an evidence warehouse somewhere. Or, if it's returned to that farmer, it'll end up fetching a handsome sum on eBay. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters' comments on the current state of aviation in the U.S. from her address at the FAA 2008 Annual Forecast Conference. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.